This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9. Joy.
Good evening, listener. This is Well, and I'm Jack from the Victorian AIDS Council. We are now bringing you our show every Monday evening from 8 through to 9. My co-host tonight is Cal. Cal, you've been busy. I believe last week you had Peter Locke from Equinox on board on the show.
Absolutely.
And the launch was last Tuesday evening, I believe, and you were there.
I was there. You know what? I'll tell you what. Yep. I was talking to Peter about it last week, and if anybody tuned in last week, you heard I was, you know, it was quite the affair. They really did.
Really?
They arranged it really well. I got there just after it started, so it's kicked off at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. It's up at Pronto site, same site, or rather, I should say, the same site as Pronto, because now it's a co-location. So Equinox and Pronto use the same site, but they use it at different hours.
And what is Equinox exactly?
So it is the gender diverse health clinic. So it's aimed at the transgender diverse community here in Melbourne, or further afield in Victoria, if you will. And yeah, it's sort of like really groundbreaking. It's the first of its kind, really, I think, to this extent in Australia. I believe there's a similar clinic in Queensland, but it doesn't run kind of the same full gamut of hours.
Sure.
But yeah, it was a really clever solution.
And what are the hours exactly, just for the listener too, in case I want to make an appointment? How can I do
absolutely
that?
So you can contact, you can use a lot of the existing contact details for Pronto at the moment, so pronto.org.au, or their main number, which bookings are at 03-9416-2889. So again, that's 03-9416-2889, and the hours, it runs Mondays and Thursdays 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. and then alternating Fridays from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The Pronto service then, of course, runs in the evening, as it always has. So it's a really clever solution. You basically use the same space to serve various
good use communities. Of a resource too.
Absolutely.
And servicing a broader community.
Yeah. But the event, sorry, you asked about that. It was great. They had a food truck outside. And if you've ever been to Pronto, it's not the biggest site.
No.
But having a food truck outside, it like took people out onto the streets. So it sort of got this street festival vibe. Tacos were, going and drinks were flowing. And Mama Alto, special shout out to Mama Alto, amazing performer. just very like, this jazzy blues in the night. I loved it.
How good is that?
Fantastic.
So every week we'll be bringing you news here on Joy 94.9, news, views, and updates on some very important topics.
That's right. And on Well, you continue to hear about sex, health, and well-being in our gender, sex, and sexually diverse community.
But tonight on our show, we have Anna Brown, the human rights lawyer with the Human Rights Law Centre. Anna is the Director of Advocacy and Strategic Litigation and will talk to us about the state government's apology to gay men for being charged with criminal offences for being homosexual, which of course means that they've always had a criminal record on the statutes. What does it mean? What is this all about? So Anna will be explaining the ins and out of the apology and the changes to the people's personal records.
We've lucked out. We're on the eve of the apology.
I know.
This is a great night to be talking about.
Certainly
it.
Is.
And beyond that, later in the week is the Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Conference. So we are going to be talking to Rowena Allen a little bit later on, who's the gender Victoria's own and the first gender and sexuality
Indeed.
Commissioner within the Department of Premier and Cabinet in the Victorian state government. Like I said, we'll be talking about the upcoming Lesbian, Bisexual, and Queer Women's Conference here in Melbourne next Friday, May 27th at Jasper Hotel here in Melbourne. If you went last year, it was amazing. Huge community response.
Yes, it's the second one, isn't it?
That's right. And it really illustrates, if you kind of wondered, is there a real need for these things? Sometimes when the government gets involved or, community works, they say, do we need these things? I'll tell you what, it was packed out. It was booked out well in advance, and an amazing dialogue throughout the day. If you've missed out, you make sure you check it out.
And if you've missed out on any of our last shows, or you just want to hear a show you've heard before or share it with friends, you can download our podcasts on previous episodes of Well at www.joy.org.au. And our thanks go to David, too, who is our Joy podcaster.
Yeah, thank you, David. And to connect with us or join in on the conversation tonight, you can send us an email on air at joy.org.au, or you can SMS us here in the studio, 0427-JOY-949. And that comes straight here into us in the studio. It can incorporate tonight's very interesting dialogue.
It does
dialogue,
indeed. We want to hear from you. Be part of the show.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and this week another important event will be taking place. It's the second Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Conference on Friday, this Friday, May 27th, which is a joint initiative of both VAC and ACON. Joining us online now to give us an overview is Rowena Allen, the Gender and Sexuality Commissioner. Rowena,
good evening,
thanks,
Jack.
Thanks for coming on. Well, well, well. Now you're one of the keynote speakers. So, in a nutshell, why is such a conference so important?
Look, it's really important to bring people from all around Australia and internationally. We've got international guests as well to really look at lesbian, bi, and queer women, and intersex and trans women's health, because unfortunately, over the last 25 years, smoking rates have halved, but lesbian, bi and queer women smoke twice as much as the general population. Alcohol-wise, well, international research says that in the last 20 years, consistently found that lesbian, bisexual and queer women, you know, are three times as likely, more likely, I should say, to binge drink.
That's overwhelming statistics, isn't it?
It's pretty bad. And then, you know, you add lower rates of cervical screening and all those sorts of things, and there's going to be heaps to talk about.
Well, why don't mainstream services provide the services or fill the gap that is so desperately needed? What's the issue? What's the problem there?
I think they've got to know what the data says.
Yep.
And we've got to keep, and that's why it's really important. So I would expect that, you know, with a well-attended conference, we'd be really aiming at a whole lot of mainstream health professionals to really expand their professional understanding of why it's important to, you know, to market, if you like, to lesbian, bisexual and queer women, really.
Do you think there's any overt stigma or discrimination that queer women, do they report it or experience in accessing health services generally?
Yeah, we have limited, you know, research on it.
Yeah,
but yes, like, take cervical screening. There's an extra homophobia, biphobia or transphobia, you know, related to that on top of the normal embarrassment that can, you know, can really be barriers for women or anyone who has a cervix to do the, you know, the usual medical things. Even coming out to your doctor can still be an issue for women as well.
I remember Buck Angel, when he was out here, a trans man, he was talking about his health and that he had to have an emergency hysterectomy. And the medical services went into meltdown dealing with the trans man with a womb. So
yeah,
there's lots of things we can learn, I'm sure, about trans health in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's going to be presenters, as I said, from the UK. We've got Professor Julie Fish, and she's done, you know, a great piece of work called Perspectives for Change, which is the largest ever study into lesbian, bi and queer women's health in Europe. So, you know, there's we can learn from overseas, but we've got the most amazing people looking through the program today. You know, our very own Dr. Ruth McNair. She's going to be there, well known to us. And then there's so many people. So we've got a workshop on biphobia and bi invisibility by Rebecca and Mel. They're great advocates in that space. There's another one. If you've never seen Jackie Brown do her thing around disability and sexual expression through social justice, she's absolutely fantastic. So there's all those intersections as well. And for Aboriginal issues, you know, we've got Rebecca Johnson down from Queensland, who was a co-founder of Indigi-Les,
yes,
which is a women's leadership and support group. So there's heaps to do.
It's a broad brush.
It's not already sold out.
Yeah.
It is. There's something in it for everyone. Yeah. And we've got lots to learn. And the best thing about women is when we get together, we share stories and, you know, support each other. And I think it's really important that we do that in the medical sphere as well.
Sure. And the other keynote speaker, Professor Julie Fish, she's from De Montfort University in Leicester in the UK. And I know she's published books on human rights and LGBTI health inequalities around the world, hasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. And there's an absolute pick-up to pick her up for this conference as well. So you know, it's going to be action-packed, and, you know, it's one of those awful things, too many workshops, not enough time, you know, you're going to have to make choices between all
these
people.
It's only one day.
It's one day. Yeah. I mean, it's enough here for 3 days, yeah. Conference, you know.
We've touched on so many of the issues very, very quickly here. Are you happy to stay with us, and after a couple of announcements, we'll come back to talk a couple of those a bit more in depth?
No problem.
Cheers. Thanks for us.
Joy. 94.9.
You are listening to Well on Joy 94.9. We're talking to Rowena Allen, the State Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, and we're talking about the upcoming Lesbian, Bisexual, and Queer Women's Health Conference happening this Friday, the 27th of May. Rowena, so we touched on so many topics. I think we could probably delve into any one in particular. But I guess overall, why do you think, VAC has sort of stepped into this space relatively, I mean, last year was the first one. And why do you think there hasn't been more of kind of a community dialogue to date?
I think we really got to carve open the space for it. I don't know why there hasn't been more to date, but certainly there's been a number of, you know, reports published, as we talked about, you know, Ruth's work and others. Mm-hmm. It is real, you know, it does cost money to put a conference on, so it's good that ACON and VAC, who are, you know, financially able to, have done that in this space. So, you know, I think, you know, that's a barrier for coming together, and certainly, you know, this costs in organising a conference. They don't just happen. Mm, people yep. who've ever run a conference before know. there's a fair bit of work involved in it. But, you know, these are not the first two conferences. You know, we've had Health Indifference, and that's had, you sure. know, for many, many years now, which has had a huge focus on lesbian, bisexual, trans women, intersex, you know, queer women's health issues. It's just that, you know, we're just taking out a bit of time, a bit prioritising, you know, a national conference. But I think it's by the numbers, I think it's going to be well catered for in relation to people from all different states. So I think that's great to you know, give people another chance to do it. I think Health Indifference, by memory, is only every 2 years, I think.
I think that's correct. Yeah, it's by, yeah.
So, you know, having this in the alternate year is fantastic.
Now, Rowena, you touched on it before. You said there were lower screening participation rates in the queer women's space, like for cervical cancer. Why would that be? Because isn't that just, I'm showing my ignorance here as a male, isn't that a basic sort of health check that a woman should be on top of?
Yeah, it is, but I can remember my GP saying, oh, as a lesbian, you don't need to have a pap screen. And me saying, oh, well, actually, no, I think I do. So, you know, and that was some time, you know, that was over 10 years ago now, but we still have to do a little bit of training for the medical profession out there too about some sure. of our health needs. So, you know, that's still an issue to make sure that people know what we need, and so we know, we get good advice and we know what we need as well. So, but, you know, if you haven't come out to your doctor, you know, whether you go for a pap screen or not, or how frequently you go to the doctor to be reminded, all those sorts of things are, you know, and obviously for trans men, it's just a whole other minefield of issues.
And, of course, being a lesbian, reproductive health may not be at the forefront of many clinicians' thinking.
No, that's right.
Because lesbians don't have, you know, because you're not, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of...
There's going to be workshops on, you know, IVF and parenting and, you know, things as well. And, you know, sometimes we've got to take charge of our own destinies in that space because, no, maybe the GPs, depending on which GP you go to, of course,
sure.
are thinking about kind of, you know, sexual health or reproduction health when they, you know, they know the person in front of them is a lesbian or a bisexual woman, I suppose.
Yeah. And let's not forget that women are often the ones raising children, so you can't escape, even as a gay woman, a lesbian, you can't escape family pressures or work-life balance, often unequal pay rates resulting in financial issues. So it's a minefield, this whole diversity issue, isn't it? It's a minefield around mental health outcomes and compliance with health checks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you've nailed it. You know, it's also about looking after our mental health while we're trying to deal with all that as well. As the glass ceilings and all the other things that go on for women about the gender inequalities and, as you said, the pay gaps and everything else that goes on in our lives. Yeah.
And so
it's also about coming together and celebrating all wonderful things as well. So
absolutely. Yeah. It's positive.
And I think, yeah, it sends an important kind of community message out there that, you know, these conversations that we are facilitating these and that these are relevant and important because I guess visibility of this kind of dialogue, you know, is something that needs to be addressed. Now, Rowena, you mentioned before, you know, we were talking about, you know, screening for cervical cancer and pap smears, which is, you know, true for all women. But is there anything exclusive kind of to the lesbian, bisexual and queer women's kind of sector that is particularly worrying, I suppose, or is a particular concern that people may not realize?
No, to be honest, on the spot like that, I can't think of one particular thing. I mean, there are lots of worrying things,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, we've got a whole stream at the conference around family violence and intimate partner violence, for example, and that has different expressions in all different type of relationships. So, you know, and I think as lesbians and bisexual queer women, you know, it's often something we don't talk about.
Mm.
You know, sort of a taboo topic in generally and let alone within relationships between women, you know, or bisexual people feeling unsupported in services as well because their sexuality becomes invisible. You know, these are all issues that we need to navigate. You know, we're delving into the family violence space and there's three workshops on family violence out of the program here. So, you know, it's great to see people stepping up and exploring those issues. You know, lots of the stuff in here worries me.
why do you use those
keeps
words?
Keeps me awake at night.
Oh, keeps you awake. Well, of course, as in your role, you'd be thinking, God.
Well, you know, if I went to every workshop, I'd probably get a shopping list of things to do out of all of them. But we're certainly taking on family violence. I've been appointed to the state steering committee by Minister Richardson on family violence. So, you know, that's a piece of work. Going to be great.
Rowena, really, you seem to be everywhere, responding to every request. Who's looking after you?
See, I have a wonderful woman in my life, you see.
Well, that's good. And I love that I was at a talk you gave recently and you said your one of your children said, how did they call you? You were the sex...
Yes, the Commissioner for Sex, because she couldn't spell sexuality and gender. So.
That's right. So all eyes lit up when they knew that her mum was the Commissioner for Sex.
Well, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, that's it. I've taught her how to spell it all now, so we should be in good shape. she's fantastic. She tells me when enough's enough and when she needs to see me. So she's pretty articulate, my 8-year-old. But
they know it all at 8.
Big changes.
Yeah.
Oh, they know it all at 8.
So hopefully an outcome from this conference may be some reorientating of existing services or to be made more aware, both women and clinicians as well, and to be more creative in inclusive practices. So,
yeah, nobody's got time for talk fests. We need to see some actions out of the conference.
Mm. Yep.
And it's all geared in that way that we can actually, you know, get some recommendations or a communique out of the day and be able to then, you know, promote what we're suggesting to the general health sector. That's the really important thing. It's one thing to talk with each other, but what we really have to do is go and talk out in the mainstream, because otherwise we're preaching to the converted. We really have to go and let the mainstream medical services really understand that, you know, they need to take the cloak off our invisibility you know, make sure that they're providing services to the individuals for all our needs.
Sure. Now, as we know, this is the second year of the conference, so it appears that demand speaks for itself. It's filling up fast, but I believe there's still some spaces if people do want to come along.
Yep, you want to go to LBQ Women's Con. So that's LBQWOMENSCON@vac.org.au. But if you didn't quite grab the pen and paper fast enough for that, if you go to vac.org.au, it's the first slider on the homepage to check out the Lesbian, Bisexual, and Queer Women's Conference. That is happening this Friday at the Jasper Hotel, 489 Elizabeth Street in Melbourne, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So it is a day conference, but well worth it if you can make it. Absolutely. Rowena, we will see you there.
See you there.
For being on our show.
My pleasure.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Jack and Kel, and this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. And joining us tonight is Anna Brown from the Human Rights Law Centre. Thanks, Anna, for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Now, tomorrow is going to be an historic day for gay men in this state. The Premier, Daniel Andrews, is going to make an announcement, an apology, in fact, to those convicted under laws that criminalised homosexual acts. So, Anna, how did this all come about in the first place?
Well, I mean, it started decades ago, really, with the struggle of people before our time who fought for decriminalisation. And then really this is the unfinished business from 1981, when these laws were decriminalised, we still haven't really dealt with this, the impact of these laws, and really recognising that what was done, particularly to gay men under these laws, was so very wrong and something that the state really needs to take responsibility for. I mean, my involvement started a few years ago when I worked with a number of LGBTI community organisations on a report that recommended a scheme to expunge these historical convictions or erase them, and also for that to be accompanied by a state apology. And the coalition government enacted this scheme, but we still had to wait for the apology, and now we have a Labor government that's willing to do that, and I think that's a really good thing.
So with that in mind, the fact that the expungement scheme has been introduced a while ago, I guess you'll hear some people in the community ask, you know, why is an apology necessary? And so I guess what would your response to that be?
Well, I think the first thing is to ask the people affected. And I was just talking with a client of mine, Tom Anderson, who is staying with me tonight, actually, because he's travelled down for Wodonga to come to the apology. And for him, the apology is more meaningful in a way, because it's that formal recognition that what was done to him was wrong and should never have happened. And it's that public acknowledgement and the healing that comes from that acknowledgement that's really quite profound for him and really helps him through that healing process and that journey towards self-acceptance and dealing with injustice in his past.
Speaking from a personal perspective, I grew up in an era where I was illegal, and also I had a psychiatric condition being a gay man. So even though I didn't feel I wasn't convicted, I certainly experienced the harassment, the torment, the actions of the authorities, which, so I think this is a great breakthrough, a great political announcement they're making, and I think it does heal a huge wrong from the past.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, someone who just was alive when homosexuality was decriminalised, I personally don't have experience of that, but I can only imagine, I mean, not just the people that were convicted, but everyone who was gay or thought they might be gay felt, you were either forced to deny this fundamental part of who you were, pass as heterosexual, and really that was through fear of persecution and social isolation. And there's people today, many people today in our community that may not have been convicted, but all, you know, gay men and lesbians and bisexual people really carry the weight of this history with them. And you know, it's something that, I mean, these words tomorrow, and I think the way they're said and the power and the significance with which the government's approached this moment in our history is also very welcome. It's not just being done sort of quickly and not being, it's being well thought through. It's on the, you know, just after the International Day Against Homophobia, and the flags are flying, the pride flags flying at Parliament House. And it's really, I mean, they're thinking about how to make this a meaningful occasion, not just for the LGBTI community, but a moment that's shared with the mainstream community as well, which I think is fantastic.
And does the apology actually have bipartisan support, the actual apology itself, the actions of the Premier?
This will be interesting, because this was the thing that the Coalition wouldn't do when we were, and really we were very grateful at the time, we're very appreciative of the expungement scheme as a significant step forward that the Coalition government, and let's remember we had Attorney General Robert Clark, who had said that gay men, being gay was like having spina bifida, so we'd come a long way in terms of the Coalition and on gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender and intersex issues. And I think tomorrow, I'd like to think that tomorrow we will see a show of bipartisan support, and wouldn't that be wonderful? And I think we've got a quite progressive leader of the opposition in Matthew Guy, and I'm quietly optimistic that we will see that show of support from the opposition as well.
And I was going to ask about that, kind of the landscape in general in Victoria. How do you think we compare to the other states in Australia?
Well, doesn't it look like we're streaming ahead, is what I think.
It does. It does.
We're really turning into the progressive capital of Australia, and whether it's support for Gaby Baby, documentaries and safe schools, that personal political leadership that Daniel Andrews has shown now on many issues affecting our community. Well, really, the really important institutional reform that comes with having a Rowena Allen, who I understood was on earlier, mm-hmm. the work she's doing, having that voice within a government in the Minister for Equality, Martin Foley, and his team of public servants that are making a quiet but very significant difference from within government. I mean, all of this is having an incredibly positive impact, and we can only hope that other states and territories and the federal government takes Victoria's lead and we start to see these sorts of reforms elsewhere, because I think we're very lucky. I'm starting to describe Victoria now as queer nirvana.
That's we
it.
Love
I'm,
it.
I'm calling it.
Okay, I want to unpack this a bit more. If you can stay with us, Anna, we're going to go to a song here. You're listening to Jack and Cal here in studio on Well, Well, Well.
Do you have a cat-shaped hole in your heart? Do you know that around 250,000 unwanted cats and dogs are euthanized in Australia every year? Ingrid's Haven is a not-for-profit cat shelter based in Broadford, 1 hour north of Melbourne CBD. Ingrid rescues cats from local pounds each week and cares for them until their forever family comes to save them. Rescue a furry feline today. Visit ingridshaven.net.au for more information or find them on Facebook. A community service message made possible by Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and with us tonight is Anna Brown of the Human Rights Law Centre. If you want to be part of the discussion, email us onair@joy.org.au or send us an SMS on 0427 Joy 949. And what a great community announcement, Anna. It fitted right in with our conversation tonight.
I know. How topical and appropriate.
Perfect.
So, Anna, we were talking before about the expungement scheme, and when, I guess, you know, for myself, and I know you outed yourself as, you know, someone born in the 80s as well, or just before the 80s.
And I outed myself as somebody
before,
earlier.
Even older. Child of the 70s.
There's always somebody older, Anna.
Yeah, that's right. Not to say that Jack has you beat. I mean, his youthful voice, no one knows how old.
It's a mystery.
But I guess, what were the charges or convictions that we were talking about here for people who might not understand, like, what that looked like at that time?
Yeah, sure. And I'm also, it'd be good for me to talk a bit about, you know, I'm providing free legal help to people that want to make applications. So if there's anyone out there with a conviction, they can feel free to contact me. But before we get on to that, the offences we're looking at really range from everything from the abominable crime of buggery, as it was called, to sort of gross indecency between male persons, and then this strange offence of loitering for homosexual purposes, which I think is the closest thing to a thought crime we've ever had in this country. Because, I mean, what is a homosexual purpose, and how do you tell if someone's loitering for one? And then there's some generic offences like offensive behaviour. And women, there's a report of some women that were convicted of offensive behaviour when they were holding hands on a tram, for example. I found a historic report of that. So predominantly men were charged using these offences, particularly in beat locations.
Okay.
They were actively hunted, some would say, by police operations who spied on beats, known beats, and often used inappropriate or what some would call entrapment to capture these men, often secure confessions, enforced circumstances or circumstances where the men weren't given access to legal representation, and often these men who were very young mostly, or the men that I'm helping were very young, or most of them were very young when they were convicted. The stories were splashed on the front page of the Truth newspaper in a really horrible way that named them, that talked about where they lived, and it meant that...
They gave addresses.
Yeah, horrible.
I can vouch for everything you've just said, Anna.
Yeah.
And we saw...
And you lived through... you lived through that time, whereas I've just read and heard about it from people affected. So, I mean, it just sounds... unimaginable today, but horrific.
And just to get a better perspective on how an expungement scheme works, I mean, it's not that when this passed, basically the slate is cleared for these guys, that they go and find out all those charges and just remove them for their record. What does that process look like?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it would be great if we could just click our fingers and have them all removed from records, but because the offences in question involved conduct that some of which, for example, buggery included consensual and non-consensual anal intercourse. So okay. It means that you do have to go through a process just to check that the conduct would still be considered lawful today, or would be considered lawful today. Mm-hmm. So just to check that everyone's above age, that consent, and there wasn't some other offence being committed. That's the way Victoria structured its scheme. New South Wales took a slightly different approach, but that's a whole other story. So that's why I would suggest that people do get a bit of legal help, not necessarily the first step, but if they need to down the track, if they're asked for further information. But all you'd really have to do is put in an application, and that really just involves proving who you are, submitting some identity documents, and then this is to the Department of Justice, the expungement scheme, and this is very easily found on the internet. But I am conscious that there's sort of an older cohort here who might not have easy access to the internet. It's sure. really important that we get the message out to them. But you can ring up this expungement line, and maybe someone there can have a little Google of it while I'm talking to you, and you can read it out. But find out more. I'm also happy to help people. Even if people want to come in and I can certify their documents. And then sure. it's really it's a confidential process. I think it's quite sensitive. It's not really onerous. And then the real problem is at the other end, they've got to find your records, and that can be a bit of a challenge with old historical records. Yeah. And then if all's in order, then the decision's made to expunge. And that actually does mean, in the case of secondary records or electronic records, they are physically deleted. And for primary records, so an old, big old magistrate's book with a lot of pages in it, they'll annotate the record to make it clear that it should never be referred to. And then once it's expunged, it is as though it never happened. So you cannot be forced, or you can say on oath in a court that you were never convicted of that offence and you are not lying. So that is the effect of the expungement.
That's terrific, but I just know that some people I know who live through the trauma and still bear the burden, even going through this process, it will be raw and emotional and something that many people just don't want to expose themselves to yet again.
Yeah.
As well-meaning as it is, I think it's marvellous, but I know there are people who just don't want to relive any of it.
It's
a major problem.
I completely agree with you. I'm very conscious of that too. And if it makes people feel any more comfortable about going through the process, Jamie Gardner, who might be known to yes. people, who's a man in his, dare I say, 70s, if we're talking ages, yeah. who Jamie was around at the time, yeah. is obviously very, as an older gay man, very sensitive to the needs of people that yeah. might be making applications. And he's on board with the Human Rights Law Centre and helping. He's on our board, actually.
That's great.
Literally. But he's going to be helping with these applications. So when men feel like they want to talk to someone that understood
yep.
What it was like at the time, we have someone that can help them with their application that is extra sensitive to their needs.
Great.
But I completely take that point. Like there's such a mistrust of authority there, and there'd be so many emotions and memories that would be stirred up by even thinking about going through something like this. But hopefully it's there for those that need it.
No, that's great.
And
and it will be a healing
thing.
And
more people get expunged. Yeah, I think so too. And, for some people that it hasn't had a practical impact on their life, maybe it won't be as important, but they know that it's there. And I think that's what is significant at the end of the day, that it is out there. The expungement scheme is there for people to take advantage of if they so wish.
And some of these charges were levelled against people too in the privacy of their own homes, not just in public places,
yeah.
but in private.
From what I've read, it sounds like that sort of situation occurred most often where police were called in to say armed burglary or break and enter and in someone's home, and then lo and behold there was a discovery that these two men were living together and the poor couple in question ended up being charged with those types of offences because of they were discovered through that other means. So it's
an amazing time I guess, to kind of look back on it. And, you know, as Jack said, I think it's, you know, we do have to kind of think about, you know, for a lot of these guys, it's a bit of an ask from a mental health standpoint. But if someone does decide that they want to go down this route, you mentioned that there would be legal advice is available through the Human Rights Law Center. Can you tell us a little bit more about that or how people would take those steps?
So I'm really happy to, and we've got a small team of Jamie, myself, and soon a lawyer called Lee Carney who's joining our team. We're all LGBTIQ identifying, all with a really deep and specialist knowledge of the scheme, but also the political and historical circumstances of the time. So if people do want some help, they can send an email to expungement@hrlc.org.au, or they can ring our phone number on 03 8636 4450 and get onto someone there that can give them some, and even if it's just coming in and helping get your documents in, something simple like that, we're really happy to help with the process, recognizing that, you know, every little barrier, every little hurdle can be a barrier, so we want to make it as easy as people as possible. And I think Cal, you might be able to speak a bit more about this, but the Victorian AIDS Council and other services are out there providing counselling and emotional support for people as well.
Absolutely.
Are. Yeah. So, of course, you've got our friends at Switchboard, which is 1-800-184-527, are always available 7 days per week. You've got, yes, the Victorian AIDS Council, which you can reach us at 03-9865-6700 or a 1-800 number, 1-800-134-840. And there are counselling services delivered through the Victorian AIDS Council at our office in South Yarra.
Correct.
And of course, if it's, you know, on the, you know, I've talked about mental health here a couple of weeks ago, if you are experienced duress under this, and tomorrow, you know, we'll probably churn up a lot of feelings for people, there's of course Lifeline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 1-3-11-14. And again, Anna, that legal assistance, if you want to give us those details, and actually I should ask, what is the cost for that service?
It's free, so and when the government's not paying, but the numbers aren't they're not big numbers, so we're really happy to help with that. And it's also a way of us monitoring the scheme to make sure it's operating fairly for people and keeping an eye out for any issues that might need to be addressed.
And that was expungement@hrlc.org.au?
Yes, and the phone number is 86364450.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us. Mm. Absolutely. It's just amazing to look back on for myself, obviously, you know, from a time that I didn't come from, and to, you know, hear Jack's stories, and as well as, I believe, will we hear from anyone tomorrow with regard to speakers from lived experience?
Yeah, look, not in the parliament, but we are going to have some men with convictions that, I mean, they'll be speaking to the media throughout the day. And I think if people are attending the afternoon tea at the Windsor, my hope is that there'll be some men with convictions and affected, and perhaps someone like Jamie Gardner speaking the afternoon tea after we've heard from all the politicians.
Full marks to you and your crew, Anna. It's great work you're doing.
No, I mean, I'm really happy to be part of something that's so important. So I think happy day, big day for everyone, and something we can all be proud of.
Indeed.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us on air. We will look out for you tomorrow.
Cheers.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Bye. That is correct. And in fact, if you do want to hear the state apology tomorrow, Tuesday, 24th of May at 2 p.m., the Victorian government will deliver a formal state apology in Parliament. You can register your attendance by emailing equality@dpc.vic.gov.au. All registrations are treated confidentially. And for further inquiries about the apology, contact Victorian government on 1-300-366-356. It's amazing. And I believe you'll be able to live stream it as well. So if you get online and you check it out, I believe I've heard rumors that it's live streamed.
Really?
And that's how I'm hoping to kind of catch it, because I don't know if I'll be able to get it.
No, there's lots of things happening. No, I think it's a great initiative on the part of the government. Long time coming. Overdue, but it's coming. And people like Anna and the people at the law...
Human Rights Law Centre
are magnificent. We're lucky to have them. We're proud of you all.
Absolutely. You are listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. That is us for another week. If you've missed any part of the show, keep an eye out in a few days' time, the podcast on joy.org.au. Look up Well, Well, Well. Otherwise, we will see you next week at 8 p.m. on Monday nights. That's it for another week. Jack, it's been an absolute pleasure.
And mine, Cal. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.